Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. At the beginning of a normal summer, Smart Talk features a program to discuss and suggest books to read on the beach or on vacation. This year is different, with so many people home from work or maybe not traveling for vacation. But staying at home is a great opportunity to read more books. Smart Talk is joined by a panel to talk about new releases, fiction and nonfiction and children's books, and of course, what's been in the news the last 3 months or so, the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, and also Black Lives Matter, the protests that have occurred and some of the issues that it's brought up here in the past 3 weeks. We'd like to hear your suggestions for books as well, books that you are reading. Maybe you have a question about a genre that you're interested in and I'm looking for a suggestion. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smart. Talk at WITF.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number 1-800-729-7532. Now, to introduce our panel, Catherine Lawrence is a writer and co-owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania. And Carolyn Blatchley, executive director of the Cumberland County Library System. Welcome to the three of you. A little bit different today.
Thank you so much for having us, Scott, here in this virtual way.
And it is a virtual way, that's for sure. Again, if you'd like to join in our conversation, 1-800-729-7532. Before we get to some of the titles and the suggestions, maybe just a quick note on how the three of you are, or maybe you can tell our listeners, how to get books, how to obtain books during this time at home. Catherine?
Sure. Well, for the Midtown Scholar, we have been fulfilling online orders throughout the pandemic and time of isolation. And in June, we've just started fulfilling phone and online orders through curbside pickup. For June, we're open Saturdays only from 9 to 3, and we have an outdoors sidewalk sale. And right now, we're basically preparing to reopen the interior of the store to the public in a few weeks. So our grand reopening indoors for book shopping in person will be July 9th. But in the interim, you know, this has been a long time to be not just without books, because you can order books online or other ways. I know the other folks here will talk about that, but also without authors and conversations. And so to fill that gap, we really have turned to a new opportunity and with all our energies. So 2 to 4 times a week since March, we've offered virtual event author talks on live streaming platforms, our own sort of audio and visual video presentations on Crowdcast, Facebook Live, and YouTube Live. We sort of live stream multi-platform, and we've had 2 to 4 authors a week on all sorts of topics, from Black Lives Matter to the pandemic to just great novels to read for the summer, and we're really excited about that, and we expect that virtual event series, we call it, to continue through the summer as well.
Yeah, I've had an opportunity to participate in a few of those, and it's been a lot of fun. I think that there's been great participation. Travis, what about you? How are you keeping up your jonesing for books?
Hi, Scott. Hi, and everybody. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'd just like to follow up really quickly on what Catherine was saying about the author talks and the virtual events. Not to talk about a silver lining during a health pandemic, but nationally and around the world, we've had access to writers and talks and lectures and education in ways that we haven't before. All these events that were in person, all these panels that were in person at bookstores like Midtown Scholar were suddenly shifted online in March. And so I and my students and everyone has had access to authors that we've never been able to see or listen to live before. So it's been fantastic. My students have been watching these. I've watched a bunch of the Midtown Scholar events. And it's just been wonderful to be able to access these authors in ways that if you couldn't get to that city or couldn't get out of your house or you had to, you know, cook dinner for your kids like me, you often didn't make these events. That's been fantastic. And I want to thank you, Catherine, for hosting all those events and putting those online. But, yeah, I've been using to order a lot of my books. This Andy Hunter, a writer, editor, and publisher out in New York, has been working with a lot of friends out there and innovating publishing for a little over a decade now. And just before the pandemic, actually, him and some other people launched bookshop.org, which is an online book retailer. You can go and buy just about any book you want on there that supports independent and local bookstores. And so since the pandemic started, I hopped on there, and actually I used a link from Midtown Scholar's own website, and you can use whatever your local bookstore is, and usually they have a associated page on bookshop.org. And when you buy a book that gets mailed to your house from bookshop.org, it supports your local independent bookstore. So I've been using that, and also for audiobooks, I've been using an associated website called Libro FM, which I got an audiobook about soccer on.
Oh, that sounds great. So, Caroline, what about the, or Carolyn, I'm sorry, what about the libraries in Cumberland County? And I think this is going on at libraries throughout the area.
That's right. Public libraries in Pennsylvania are following a framework for reopening public libraries that came down from the state. And so most public libraries are now opening or open and offering modified services to get books into the hands of readers, even if their doors aren't open yet. A lot of places are doing curbside service. And in Cumberland County, we should have all of our libraries open before the end of the month. But right now, I think we're up to four. So you can go to your libraries, you can go to their websites and place your holds and pick them up at the library in a perhaps a no-contact environment. And in some cases, you can go straight up to the desk and talk to your favorite people. We also have librarians on staff who are happy to give reading recommendations. Some libraries have services where you can express the types of books that you like to read, and they'll make recommendations. They'll send them to you. They'll help you put them on hold. We also have databases. One of our databases is called Novelist. It's one that I love to look at and learn more about the books that I love to read, and then associated books, authors, and similar titles. And we also have one from the state called Gale Books and Authors with a feature called What Do I Read Next? So those are great places to get recommendations on your own and then place the holds in your library. We also have on our websites, almost every public library in Pennsylvania will have some kind of online reading platform. In our county, it's OverDrive, and we put a significant amount of money into OverDrive during the pandemic when everybody was staying home so that people could continue to read. We also created a new digital library card so that people could, if they hadn't gotten a card before everything closed down, they could get a card.
Well, that sounds great. Okay, let's get into some of the books. And there is one thing that we did request, or I did request, is that, you know, with everything that is going on around the world, around the country right now, between the Black Lives Matter protest and emphasis on civil rights and inequality, that some suggestions on books that have to do with that that topic. Also, the pandemic. Now, there's one book I want to start with that both Travis and Carolyn have on your list, Station 11. Carolyn, tell me a little bit about Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel.
This was one of my favorite books to read last year, and it's been around since 2014. It was when it came out, and it is a solid story that just brings you into this the lives of a group of people who come together after a catastrophic virus. It's called the Georgian flu, and it wipes out most of the world's population very quickly. It's a scary virus. People don't even realize they have it, and they're dying. And so it moves back and forth through time. There are some people who are immune to the virus, and the novel just charts the strange twists of fate that connect all of the people in the book. Probably the most intriguing characters to me were the people who were stuck for years in an airport and living there and watching the whole world disappear around them. And
wow.
It's just such a compelling story. And and when I read it, I just thought, nothing like this could ever happen. And wow.
Yeah. Travis, you have it on your list. Why did you like this book?
Oh, I do. And it's for all the same reasons Carolyn said. And it's why I've been thinking about it a lot more these days. But I remember when I read it, it wasn't just the pandemic or the Georgian flu that really captivated me, but it's a real homage to sort of the artists and the need for art and community. And so it uses a pandemic, I think, to argue for those things. As the people sort of wander around the nation post the Georgian flu, they're memorizing and performing Shakespeare's work. As you sort of flash back to before the flu, you see this woman working on this sort of like space opera graphic novel, which becomes sort of a plot point for the people after the flu. And you just see how art kind of brings community together and is a real kind of focal point for the way people relate to each other and to the past. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful work, and it's going to be HBO Max, which is the interesting new HBO platform that we're all trying to understand. But it's going to be a new HBO Max series coming soon. I think they've been working on it. No doubt that's been put behind a little bit because of the pandemic.
Catherine, I want to move to you, and this is a book by an author that you had on one of your virtual interviews, Pandemic 1918, Eyewitness Accounts from the Greatest Medical Holocaust in Modern History, by Catherine Arnold. Tell me a little bit about the book.
Yes, this is a fascinating book and author, and we were lucky enough to have WITF's Brent Schultes to be the interviewer on our recording of this interview. If you missed seeing it or hearing it, you can find it on our YouTube channel. And this is a history that actually came out, you know, in 2018, in the 100th anniversary of the 1918 Spanish flu. And it is based on these eyewitness accounts. It's got great, fascinating photographs and collections of newspaper accounts and firsthand witnesses from their journals and diaries recording what it was like to live through the Spanish flu. I don't know if you all saw in the New York Times on Sunday, they had a fascinating graphic about how the COVID-19 epidemic has compared in the deaths and effects on major cities across the U.S. and the world in relation to the Spanish flu and its effects on cities like Philadelphia and Boston. And that resonance makes this book especially interesting reading to see how communities handled having the schools closed down abruptly in the middle of October and how the authorities would work to try and stay ahead of things. But really, it was a very challenging proposition then as now. And the history of that Catherine Arnold brings to life is really very accessible. It's readable. It's meant for the general reader, and it's a terrific, fascinating book to give us the kind of. I find it hard to read anything that I might usually have read during this time of sort of isolation. My reading habits have changed, but this is one book that has still been of great interest to me because it has that resonance with the past versus the modern day.
There are a lot of parallels. I read the book as well, and there are a lot of parallels. But something you mentioned Philadelphia, Catherine. Philadelphia, like New York for COVID-19, which was the epicenter, Philadelphia was the epicenter for the Spanish flu in the United States. Now, that's just in the United States. This was a worldwide epidemic that killed up to 2 million people. So it just is an incredible book. But it's Catherine Arnold, Pandemic 1918, Eyewitness Accounts from the Greatest Medical Holocaust in Modern History. We have a lot more titles to suggest and talk about, and we'd like to hear from you as well. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I have to tell you about tomorrow's program because I think that this will be, well, we try to produce fascinating programs every day, but I think considering the current events right now that you may find tomorrow's program especially interesting. We're going to be talking about legislation here in Pennsylvania that has been introduced to provide reparations to the descendants of slaves. That is part one tomorrow, and then we'll also be talking about the removal of Confederate monuments. That's coming up on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in. Today we're talking about the books to read this summer. Our guest, Catherine Love, Lawrence, owner of Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, Travis Kurowski, an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania, and Carolyn Blatchley, executive director of the Cumberland County Library System. 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call if you would like to suggest a book or ask a question about a book. You also can send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. We have a suggestion here from Deborah, who says she recommends The Wanderers by Chuck Wendig, reminiscent of The Stand. She says it's a fantastic page-turner. It's a pandemic book. Are any of you familiar with The Wanderers by Chuck Wendig?
I know other works by his that his most recent titles, and they are really, he's a fascinating author, I think, in the science fiction genre, but really with great literary flair, whatever he does.
Also, Peter says, if you're looking to escape our current state of fear and uncertainty with COVID-19 and racial unrest, read Ann Padgett's The Dutch House or Anything by Tracy Chevalier. Sometimes it's great to get away from it all. And yes, we have to admit that there may be people who are looking to read on other topics as well, looking to get away from it. Anyone want to comment on Ann Padgett's The Dutch House or Tracy Chevalier?
I haven't read that Ann Padgett novel, but she's just a fantastic novelist since Bel Canto, which must have come out 20 years ago now. I've been a fan of her work, and she's also a bookseller, so definitely if you're ordering books, you can check out her bookstore. I've been looking forward to reading Dutch House.
Okay, so let's move on to some of the Black Lives Matters, some of the issues, inequality issues. The three of you have suggested some reading. Catherine, you actually have 10 different books, and I don't know whether these are your rankings or not, but if you had to pick one right now, I mean, we can talk about some of the others, but if you had to pick one right now, what would it be?
Yeah, I wanted to really raise up Black voices and authors, and was delighted to pick. You know, I've got books across genres, from kids to poetry, history to fiction, and they're all by Black authors. The one that comes to mind first in to resonate with your upcoming program on reparations, and this Friday is Juneteenth, which is to say being celebrated as Freedom Day or Emancipation Day. And this time of year, I like to always get out my favorite Frederick Douglass speeches and read those. I know in past years I've recommended a portable edition of Frederick Douglass. It's time to read again his essay lecture on what to the slave is the 4th of July. But this year I've got a new pick for that is newly published and is absolutely fascinating by a Philadelphia member of one of the conductors of the Underground Railroad in the middle of the 19th century. He was a leader of the Philadelphia Anti-Slavery Society, and he sort of his life's work between the 1840s when he first became involved through the Civil War until 1872, he compiled firsthand accounts of enslaved women and men who had made their way to freedom and their families and their life stories. And he compiled them in this massive 800-page collection published in 1872. And there is now, just this past year, a new edition that's been edited so it's readable. It's now the length of a novel, just about 300 pages instead of 800, but it's still has just an incredible collection of stories, and the modern day editor has really focused on the stories of enslaved women and families and talking about how the legacies of slavery on communities in the aftermath of the Civil War. And it's a great collection. It's called the Underground Railroad Records. It's actually a modern library Penguin paperback. So just a really readable, I've got it here in my hand. Sorry, I can't hold it up and show you all and show you, Scott, as at least we would in person. But it's basically like the feel of a novel and the captivating storytelling of firsthand journalism, but yet all from firsthand accounts in the 1870s and before of the Underground Railroad and people's experiences, both those who traveled on it to freedom and the people who were responsible for and took part as I guess guides and protectors along the way.
That conductor you're referring to on the Underground Railroad is William Still from Philadelphia, very famous and has looked upon, I don't, it may not be a household word, but one of the heroes of that era on the Underground Railroad. So the book is The Underground Railroad Records, narrating the hardships, hairbreadth escapes, and death struggles of slaves in their efforts for freedom by William Still. Introduction by Ta-Nehisi Coates. One of you know, that's a really good book at this time of year to be reading, or this era, I should say. Carolyn, what about you? What about in the libraries right now?
A book that really touched me recently was The Home Place, Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature. It's from 2016. The author is Joseph Drew Lanham. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. After the story of the Central Park birdwatcher Christian Cooper came out in the news recently, I was reminded of this title. It had been on my mental list to read. I'm an avid birder myself, and so I was kind of drawn to it. I don't know many non-white birders, and I thought it would be interesting to read about the black experience as a birder. And I was really pulled into his world, where he describes his upbringing in the rural South and the way that nature became his religion, but the ways that it also, his race, conflicted with the land and the harsher memories of backbreaking labor of and being treated as less than equal, or even being treated, you know, not being treated as human from his ancestors. He follows the path of his family and how they built their homestead and reached higher education. He became an ornithologist, and he's a professor of ecology. And so he talks about the people in his life, his grandmother, who was a healer, and his father and his mother, who were school teachers, and how he himself, as a young child in the 70s, fell in love with the subtle beauties of the natural world around him. And one of the most powerful, provocative chapters is called Birding While Black. And it begins with the phrase, "It's only 8:38 a.m., and I think I might get hanged today." I know from my own experience that skulking quietly around in the woods with binoculars and telescopes can easily arouse suspicion, and I can't imagine being a lone black man in a neighborhood filled with Confederate flags. He really does a good job of pulling out all the emotions that come along with that, but also spoke to me very much as a birder and an avid outdoors person. And so this book just examines life through home, family, nature, and community, and I really enjoyed it.
Travis, what about you?
Yeah, that was a compelling excerpt there, Carolyn. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, it was really hard to narrow down any sort of list. As you can see just from the New York Times bestseller list right now in nonfiction, they're all about this topic. As Catherine mentioned earlier, I think like these sort of things, whether health crisis or the 400 years history of racism and violence against black bodies in America, like really kind of push you into these topics, and it feels hard to escape from them. But one of the books, I think, I want to mention two really quick. One that is sort of letting people know about a book that's coming out in September 2020, poet Claudia Rankine has really been a really powerful voice in literature on the topic of black bodies and also racism in America. Her book Citizen, which came out about 6 years ago, An American Lyric, was what turned me on to her work. It's told in the U perspective, the U point of view, so it keeps sort of implicating the reader in everything that's going on, both into so her own perspective. It seems like things that Claudia Rankine has perhaps experienced or endured, and you're thrown into her experience, but also keeps pushing at you, the reader, and how your life kind of relates to her life. The cover of the book is just a hood removed from the hoodie or the hooded sweatshirt, because this book came out soon after Trayvon Martin's killing. It's an immense work of art. I think why I want to go to things like poetry and things like painting and film in moments like this is because I need to sort of understand another perspective besides sort of rational sort of intelligence. But she has another book coming out since then. She's, of course, been writing more and thinking more on the topic, edited a collection about the racial imaginary, which has a lot of great writers thinking on these topics, right? But in September 2020, her next book is Just Us, An American Conversation, which is trying to form a broader conversation on these topics. And if you want to read what seems like about that book, you can hop online and read her New York Times essay, which seems to be what I mean brought up the book or is for thinking about the book. It's called I Wanted to Know What White Men Thought About Their Privilege, So I Asked. When I read this, it was really, really thunderously moving and enlightening for me as a writer and as a person. And another person I want to mention is Jess Roe. I mentioned him a year ago, I think, on this program. His book, White Flights, Race, Fiction, and the American Imagination, came out last year. It was a really important book in literary studies and literary criticism, but also, I think, just for writers and readers in general. White Flights is Jess Roe's critical analysis of the white voice and white positioning and white education in contemporary American literature. And through historical contextualization and close reading, Roe deconstructs the anxiety and willed invisibility of whiteness in contemporary literature. It's a really important book for me as a teacher, a writer, and a reader who, as you can't tell across the phone, happens to be white. Jess Roe will be at York College's campus. If not, we'll try to get him on the Internet, as Midtown Scholar has been doing, on February 11th in 2021, and that's open to the public. And I'm really excited to hear his thoughts on these things.
Well, I'm hoping that you can do that in person in February 2021. who knows? Who knows what's going to happen between now and then? But I neglected to mention Carolyn's the title of Carolyn's book, the Home Place: Memoirs of a Colored Man's Love Affair with Nature, 2016, by Joseph Drew Lanham. Now, I should mention to our audience, as we always do, because we can't get to all the titles that our panelists are suggesting here today. They have some fabulous descriptions of the books that they are suggesting and reading, and we will put those on our website, witf.org/smarttalk, so you can read all about them, even the ones that we didn't get to today. I have to tell you that one of the things that, even though I'm working the same number of hours at home, there's more time to read on the weekends and that kind of thing. So even though I have probably 24 books I haven't read that I'm trying to get to, I've taken the opportunity to reread a few that I've read in the past. And one that I always really liked this book. It was edited by Michael G. Long, who is a professor at Elizabethtown College. It's called The Civil Rights Letters of Jackie Robinson, First Class Citizenship. And a lot of people, when they hear the name Jackie Robinson, they think, oh, first African-American player in Major League Baseball. But Jackie Robinson was a civil rights leader in his own right in the 60s. In particular, and the letters that Mike Long has compiled and edited and then written around, really interesting book. In fact, let me just read on the cover. Henry Louis Gates Jr. says, First Class Citizenship presents a full picture of the man whose grace and confidence on the field were matched, if not surpassed, by a voice that spoke out long and loud for the equal opportunity, civil rights, and humanity of all Americans. So just kind of give you it's a really good book. As I said, it's been around for, let me just check here. I know that we had Mike Long on our Smart Talk TV show a few years ago. This is actually from 2007, so it is a little bit longer. But have the three of you had an opportunity to reread some of your favorites? I saw, Travis, that you have War and Peace on your list.
Yeah, that's the first reading, actually, for me, and I'm still in the middle of it. I don't know if any of the listeners have been involved, but there's been a Tolstoy Together event that's been happening since late March. It was organized by Yuyun Lee, who's one of my favorite fiction writers ever. She's a Chinese woman who's been living and writing in America for the past 20 years. She's read Tolstoy many times, and Tolstoy's a huge influence on her own work. And she's read this book a lot. She wanted to read it again since we're all shoved home, and she wanted to do it in public and with everyone else to organize us all reading at the same time. She thinks a long and important work of literature, a public space at Brooklyn Literary Magazine, helped her organize the event. We're still reading it. I'm really far behind. I think maybe it's supposedly coming to an end soon. It's a long novel. I think, it's been a fascinating and wonderful reason to read a book that I might not get to, especially a lengthy book. But doing a communal art experience during these times where I am isolated by myself in my apartment has been very, very meaningful. And it's really reminded me, just like Station 11 has, that novel that Carolyn brought up, really reminded me about the power and the importance of art and literature at any time.
Well, Travis, I'm not going to tell you how it ends.
Did Napoleon win? All right.
Carolyn, are there any books that you've reread?
Yeah. Well, I had a couple of older books, older titles, and one of them was recommended actually by one of my staff members. We were talking about good books to read for the summer, and he mentioned The Martian by Andy Weir. And I remembered how much I loved that book, and the other people on staff also were saying, what a good book that is. If you haven't read it, or you know, maybe many people have seen the movie, it's an edge-of-your-seat debut thriller from this author back in 2013, but it also has laugh-out-loud dialogue mixed into it. So it's totally accessible science fiction about astronaut Mark Watney. He's stranded on Mars by a dust storm that compromises his spacesuit, and his crew is forced to leave him behind, and he struggles to survive there with minimal supplies in a harsh environment and the challenges of that environment that test his ingenuity. And it's such a fun book to read. And so that was the one I went back to this summer.
Catherine, I know you've done a lot of this in the past, but any that you reread during the pandemic?
Well, some that come to mind that I have on my summer reading list. I'm hoping we can do a family reading list where the opposite of Travis, we're basically, you know, isolated as a family group here with different ages of readers. And I think our pick this summer, it will tie along well with The Martian and that sense of a crew struggling to survive. But I think we're going to take Moby Dick. I'm hoping to convince the kids of that. They have been watching documentaries about killer whales, and I feel like somehow that will be my window to convince them to read Moby Dick with me for the first time, them, and me reread it. And Moby Dick has had a similar during the pandemic, public together way of experiencing that book. So the New Bedford Whaling Museum usually does a read-in in their museum every spring, but this year they made that an online read-in, and different members of the community up in New Bedford took an hour at a time to read a chapter, and it takes about 25 hours to have the whole thing read out loud. But now it's all up there on YouTube, and we can watch it as a family. So we're headed to Moby Dick. That sense of a struggle to survive, perhaps that's part of what's drawing me to select that book. I think the Smart Talk, you know, we've got the history, the fiction, the classic novels in there, but I'm sure we're talking about more sci-fi than usual in our suggestions here. And my number one pick, I haven't yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. I'm ready to read new books rather than reread old ones this summer is my change of habits. And top of the list is a slim dystopian science fiction novel, but it's so much more than that, called Riot Baby, that was just published in January by a Nigerian-American author named Tochi Onyebuchi. And it is basically, of all the books on my list, it's, I think, the most lyrical, modernist, just beautiful literary novel, and yet it also is resonant with contemporary events. It takes place, it starts when a child is born in Los Angeles during the time of the LA riots and the death of Rodney King, and then it moves across the United States to, I think, New England in the middle era of the novel, and then it takes this sort of interesting twist of speculative fiction as one of the characters in the novel turns out to have, like, unusual powers, we'll just say. But it is, so that's going to be my go-to novel this summer. First on my list, Riot Baby.
Okay, and again, I wanted to tell our listeners, if you're just tuning in, that we will have the list of our three panelists on our website, WITF.org/smarttalk, so you could, especially the ones we didn't get to, but if you want to learn more about the titles, about the authors, about what the books are about, you can go to our website, and that will be posted soon. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. A little bit different at the beginning of summer. Usually when we're talking about books to read this summer, we're, you know, kind of talking about some light topics for books to read on the beach or on vacation. And you still can do that at home during the pandemic or when you have more time to read. But you know, let's face it, there are a lot of things going on in the world right now that are very serious. And if you want to learn more about those topics, you can do that. And that's what some of some of the titles that our panelists are recommending today. Our guest today, Carolyn Blatchley, who is executive director of the Cumberland County Library System, Catherine Lawrence, owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, and Travis Karowski, an assistant professor of English and coordinator of creative writing at York College of Pennsylvania. If you have a suggestion or maybe a question about something you'd like to read, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, we have several suggestions from listeners. Rachel, Diane Duane's So You Want to Be a Wizard series of Tamara Pierce's Circle of Magic series. That sounds, is that a young adult or children's book?
Catherine?
I think it sounds like a middle grade young adult, yes.
Okay.
Just a whole genre of books like that, and that's a great author.
And Martin suggests, when we're talking about you know, inequality and Black Lives Matter, his suggestion, and you know, this is an older one, but Black Like Me, about a white journalist who toured the South in the 50s first as himself, and then he put on black body paint. He wore exactly the same clothes, went to the same places, and did or tried to do the same activities. He said, I read it 5 decades ago as a teenager, and I was shocked. Should be required reading for every white kid over the age of 12. As I said, an older book and what many consider a classic.
Yeah, there's a couple books from that period. There's a woman who did a similar thing, and I think one of them took even melanin-changing pills, where white people are trying kind of bodily to put themselves in the black experience. I think there's a broader conversation about those books, but certainly kind of anybody kind of reaching out from beyond their own subjective kind of personal experience into the experience of others, I think is something that books are there for.
Joyce says, I highly recommend Malcolm Gladwell's new book, Talking to Strangers. I use the audio version, which made it like listening to a podcast. Gladwell reads the book himself. There's also a portion that deals with the Sandusky scandal, so some folks might like his take on Penn State's supposed wrongdoing. Excellent and engaging. Yes, this is a book that I just heard many, many people, and it does, and I think part of it is because of where we're located and the Penn State connection there, but Malcolm Gladwell's Talking to Strangers. How's that book done, Catherine, as far as sales go?
Our store is a readers love Malcolm Gladwell. Whatever his next thing is always just people will come and pick it straight away up because he's such a proven storyteller in his accounts.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's go with a few more of the books on your list. Carolyn, what else would you recommend for our audience?
Well, so when I think of summer, there are two things I think of. There are many things I think of, but two are amusement parks and baseball. And I was reminded of an older book, Stephen King's Joyland. So if you like horror, it's a haunted carnival funhouse at an old-time amusement park on North Carolina shore, where a supernatural spin of events happened. It's based in 1973, and a college student, Devin Jones, he takes a summer job and begins to enjoy it, but then he starts discovering that there's a darker side to the park, and he finds this in the shadows of the horror house. And so that it's a fantastic story with a vicious murder and the fate of a dying child, but the ways that it changes his life forever. So it's very much, you know, Stephen King, but really believable characters and hair-raising plots. And then a much newer book just out this year, Swing Kings, The Inside Story of Baseball's Home Run Revolution, just came out in 2020 by Jared Diamond. And I was thinking about my dad and all the baseball that we're going to miss this year, and that's why this particularly caught my eye. It's about how professional baseball's recent home run boom can be attributed to evolving practices in batting. So it's upbeat, it's a humorous account that spotlights the game-changing cast of players. And it's written by a Wall Street Journal baseball writer, Jared Diamond, who's just, you know, very experienced in the field. And so it's breezy, it's entertaining, it's engaging, and should be a hit with all baseball fans, but also with just casual sports people with sports interest.
Well, yeah, the home run is something that even casual fans can get into. Yeah, so Travis, what about you?
Yeah, thanks. I can't pass up Carolyn's great hit with all baseball fans pun there.
I know.
fantastic. And I think also, like, bringing up sports books at a time like this, I think is it's something I've been turned on to. And talking to some of my students who are sports fans this past couple semesters as we all got shunted home, and then during the summer semester, are something people have really been looking into as since, I think, probably the first thing that happened was the NBA shut down a game, I think a Utah Jazz game, if I remember right. And then every sports league in every sport across the world shuttered their doors that already hadn't by that point. And so we've been missing something that brought a lot of joy and entertainment and beauty into our lives. And the way I've been sort of dealing with that, luckily, one of the best soccer historians on the planet, who I've heard him in interviews a lot and read his books, I think is British. His name is David Goldblatt, who writes these massive books on soccer history, but also soccer politics and soccer economies. His first big book was the world history of soccer dating back, 4,000 plus years. His new book that just came out, it came out in England in 2019, but the American edition came out this year, called The Age of Football, The Global Game in the 21st Century, covers how soccer has been played and funded and politicized in every aspect of the globe. He goes continent by continent and shows us how the Premier League in England with Liverpool and Arsenal has developed, how MLS, Major League Soccer, has developed and changed over the past 20 years in America. And it is a doorstop of a book. I'm listening to the audiobook, so it's hard to tell. It looks like it was like 40 hours to begin with, but it's probably an 800-page book. And it's really kind of helped me connect with a sport I love and cherish to both play and watch now that we don't, or just starting to have sports again. So it's been really engaging experience, and also looking kind of behind the scenes of how the sports, politics, and economies have happened from just a brilliant writer, David Goldblatt, has been really, really educational. And so it's The Age of Football, The Global Game in the 21st Century.
I'll tell you what, Travis, you were recommending some intimidating books there. 800 books, 800 pages, and then War and Peace. Boy,
yeah, I'm going to read the Riot Girl book, that Riot Baby book. I think that's 100 pages, right, Kevin?
It is 176. It's a lovely slim volume.
So, Catherine, what else? What do you have?
Yeah, well, I have a sports book. Mine is football, and it's a memoir. I think my most common type of book for this list for you, Scott, is memoirs. And this is a new memoir just being published tomorrow by James Conner, the Pittsburgh Steelers star running back. And he's written a book called Fear is a Choice. If you all followed his career, you may know that he really had to go from fighting for his life against cancer to pursuing a career in the NFL, and then became ACC Player of the Year. And this is his story with wisdom and advice for anyone facing adversity. It sounds like a good thing to read in these times. Basically, in his junior year of college, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and his mantra became, "Fear is a choice. I choose not to fear cancer." And that became the sort of genesis of now this memoir that he's published. And we are delighted to be hosting him for our live streaming next Crowdcast event tonight at the Midtown Scholar. And if you can't make it, then after the event itself in this virtual way, we'll have a recording of it as well. So he's our next up author. And another memoir on my go-to summer reading list is in honor of Pride Month for June. I'd recommend Darnell Moore's No Ashes in the Fire, Coming of Age, Black and Free in America. And he is he's come to the bookstore a couple of times for book talks and events. When he was 14, Darnell Moore was really tried to be set on fire by boys from his neighborhood who cornered him while he was walking home from school and harassed him because they thought he was gay. He escaped, but barely. And then this memoir is really an account of how he became a leading Black Lives Matter activist and advocate for justice and liberation, and how he grew beyond a scared, bullied teenager to find his calling. So there's another great memoir for the moment.
And
we have a lot. That one. Yeah, Darnell Moore's a great author.
Yeah, a lot of books for the moment. Speaking of which, we have a phone call from Diana in Gettysburg. Diana, you have a question about books and women's suffrage, correct?
Yes, and so, climate. Climate disruption.
Okay, go ahead.
The question is, yeah, if we're looking for, you know, the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage is this summer, so that's an important, timely event. And if you have one great read for that, and also if you could recommend, what is the one good read that you could recommend on the topic of climate disruption? And if I have time, I've got two books I'd like to recommend.
Okay, how about doing that real quick, and then we'll give our panel, because we only have about 4 minutes.
Okay, nonfiction is Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerer, beautifully written book of nature essays by a Native American woman who is also a scientist. And Barbara Kingsolver's novel, Flight Behavior, is a fabulous read.
Hey, we'll include that on our list. Hey, thank you very much for your call. Now, our panel, you've had a few minutes to think about women's suffrage, 100th anniversary, just passed over this weekend, 100th anniversary, and also climate change. Go ahead, Catherine.
Yeah, I've got a great title for the suffrage. I highly recommend a book by Elaine Weiss, ISS. It's called The Women's Hour, The Great Fight to Win the Vote. And she actually came to the bookstore last year, I believe, and we got a podcast of her talk. It is a fascinating sort of immersive history on the actual sort of move to pass the amendment. And it's sort of a great multi-layered biography, and sort of it takes you right back there to the leaders and suffrage workers of the day. And I think, Travis, on your list, you've got a great climate change book you'll want to bring up.
I do, and it's really, I put it on here for climate change because I think that's the number one sort of issue for the species, and it's nothing that we should forget about while these other really, really important issues are slamming us in the face that we have to deal with. But I really think, so Greta Thunberg is a Swedish teenager who's become a leading voice in climate change, climate demand, climate activism, and her 2018 book of her speeches, No One Is Too Small to Make a Difference, actually kind of put on this list, one, to kind of give a nod to my amazing daughters. My older daughter got it from my younger daughter to kind of praise my younger daughter's kind of activism in politics, and also just to kind of inspire her. But Thunberg, I think I put this on the list because she shows, like, when, as we're on Twitter or on the news or reading in the newspaper, a lot of these protests going on, I think for me and for some of us, I'm a 41-year-old, I think a lot of us notice how young kind of the protesters are and how inspiring that is. So I would rather have these protesters obviously not have to do this, and I would rather have them playing at the park, hanging out with each other at school or something like this. It's really motivating to see them kind of getting out there and fighting, and I think Greta and her speeches are a really inspiring sort of mini collection of essays that she wrote that kind of talk about, though she agrees she is too young to do this sort of work, She needs to get out there and do it, and we all can do it, and we have really no excuse not to do it, to be out there. It's really a lovely small collection. It's really inspiring seeing this young woman put her voice on the page and put her voice out there for a really important, important issue.
Travis Kurowski is Assistant Professor of English, Coordinator of Creative Writing at York College of Pennsylvania, Carolyn Blatchley, Executive Director at the Cumberland County Library System, and Catherine Lawrence, co-owner of the Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg. Always a lot of fun. And again, we will post your titles, your suggestions, on our website, WITF.org. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Oh.